Today's shiur in Maseches Bava Basra will be Daf Kuf Ayin Dalid. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shi'ur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the upper part of Daf Kuf Ayin Dalid in Maseches Bava Basra, we will be opening up a sugya that follows a slash mark 5 lines from the top. In our introductory comments in the outside margin, entitled Nosei Mivneh, you will notice a triangle form featured, and it represents a series, as do all the geometric forms that appear in our marking system. In this case, the triangle represents Arba Deos, B'mahu Loshon Arvus, B'mahu Loshon Kablon. What expressions indicate that the guarantor is going to be a guarantor of an orev nature or a guarantor of a kablon nature? The differences between them we have seen already on the previous Omid, Kuf Ayin Gimel Omid Beis, and with those differences in mind, we're interested in knowing by what expression does one become an orev or a kablon. We also will be using a double underline marking, which is one of our additional series markings, and we've indicated in our introduction on the outside margin Hadgoshas Milim Mishutafim Bein 1 and 2 Beravuna. We're going to be emphasizing the terms that are similar or parallel between section Roman numeral number 1 under Rav Huna's name, which represents examples of expressions that make someone into an orev, and Roman numeral 2 are a series of expressions that make someone into a kablon. Between 1 and 2 there will be terms that are common between the two situations. So as we open up the Gemara, Omar Rav Huna Hilvehu ve'ani orev. If a person says to a lender, you extend the money to the borrower, and I will be orev, I will be a guarantor. I will be a guarantor to the loan. A second expression, Hilvehu v'ani porea. Loan to him the money, and I will pay it back. Hilvehu v'ani chayov. Loan him the money, and I will be duty bound. Hilveu vani etain. You give him the money, loan him the money, and I will give you the money. Kulon loshen arvus hein. All of these expressions show that the speaker intends to be an orev. The Rashbam, kulon loshen arvus hein, the ha loshen halvo'o komar. Hilveu. As you notice, in each one of these expressions, we have Aleph, Beis, Gimel, and Dalet. They open up with the expression Hilveu, loan him. As the Rashbam says, the whole Loshon Avo Komar, Hilveu, Hu Ye Loive, that shows that the lender is in fact a Love, Ve'ani Porea Imlo Yifraloch, and if in the event that the lender doesn't pay you back, so I will pay you back. The next set of expressions, as we go on in the Gemara, Roman numeral number 2, once again we break them down, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, and Dalet, Tein lo vani kablon, Tein lo vani porea, Tein lo vani chayov, Tein lo vani etain. Kulon loshon kablonus hein. Each one of those expressions represents a different type of guarantor, a guarantor on a higher level that we refer to as a kablon. Once again, the Rashbam comments, and let us glance there. Tein lo, misor ha momoin biyodoi, give over the money to him, namely, you have the speaker, who will become a kablon, says to a lender, give him the money, vani efrenu lach, and I will pay you back. Ein kan loshen halvo. We don't have the use of an expression indicating loan, ela shlichuse. Rather, there is an expression here of shlichus, of a mission, of a mission through agency. There was an instruction issued. Give to him the money, the speaker said. And who was going to execute the giving of the money? That was going to be executed by the malva, by the lender. But the expression tainlo indicates that instructions of shlichus are being issued. And this is the core difference between kablonus and arvus. In the case of arvus, there's a man, we can say, sort of standing in the background, encouraging the lender to extend the loan and reassuring him that if the borrower doesn't pay back, he will pay back. In the case of the kablon, there is a much more forthright expression. An instruction is issued, not merely an encouragement to extend a loan, but an order, you give him the money, and I will pay you back. The Gemara continues asking about another expression, Ibaya Laho. Expression 1, Hilveu Vani Kablon. Number 2, Tain Lo Vani Orev, Mai. In this case, you have a mixture of expressions, and the question is, what is the result? In expression 1, you see hilveu, which is a loan expression as opposed to an issuing of an order. But on the other hand, you have the speaker saying, declaring that he will be a kablon. And in the second expression, the opening of it, tainlo, is the issuing of the order, the shlichus, whereas the definition, the second part of the expression, he says he will be an orev. So what's the din? Omar Rav Yitzchok. Loshon arvus, arvus. Loshon kablonus, kablonus. According to Rav Yitzchok, it doesn't matter what the opening part of the expression was, whether he used hilveu or he used tainlo. The defining factor is how the individual described himself. If he described himself as a kablon, even if he opened up by saying hilveu, he will have a kablon status. And likewise, if he opened up with an expression of tainlo, that doesn't matter. Once he described himself as an orev, he will have an orev status. The third dea regarding lishonos, Rav Chista Omar, kulon loshon kablonus hein, bar mi hilveu v'ani orev. All of the expressions will be considered kablonus. Even in a case where he says tain lo vani orev, according to Rav Chista, he will be a kablon. The only exception being where you have on both sides of the equation a very clear expression of arvus, namely hilveu, where the opening is an encouragement to extend a loan as opposed to the instruction, the order to give the money, and the second half of the expression where he declares himself to be an orev. Rava, notice another extreme opinion, he says, kulon loshon arvus hein. All of the expressions that we've seen till now will be considered arvus, bar mi tein loi vani noisein. And it's pointed out that certainly if he, Rashbam says, certainly if he says tein lo vani kablon. These are the only expressions, tein lo vani nosein, or tein lo vani kablon. Only those expressions will be kablonus. All the rest of the expressions, according to Rava, will be arvus. And as the Rashbam points out, even if he says hilveu vani kablon, or tein lo vani porea, they will all be expressions of arvus. Amalei mor bar ameimar l'ravashi, hochi omar abo. Thusly says ameimar, Tain lo v'ani noisein. If that expression is used, ein lamalva al haloive klum. According to Amemar, this would be the extreme expression of kablonas. And as a result of that, the malva would not turn to the love, v'loihi. And that's not the case. The Gemara rejects that. Lo miftar loive minei de malve, ad sheyiso v'yitein v'yad. The malve is not disconnected from the love until the kablon physically takes the money from the lender, and the kablon then gives the money to the borrower. In that case, since the kablon physically took the money from the lender, the lender's association is with that kablon alone and not with the borrower. But outside of that, according to the Gemara's Maskona, we do not say that the relationship between the malva and the lova, between the lender and the borrower, is discontinued. We see another form, new geometric form, one of our series indicators. We call this the crown form. If we glance at the outside margin, we see the mivne with a crown form featured, maisim hakshurim la'arvus. We'll see incidents that are connected in some way to the issue of a guarantor. Hahu dayona da'achte lamalva linichse delove mekami delitbe'e lalove. It was an incident where a dayon allowed a malva to descend upon the properties of the love before he tried to collect directly from the love. Salke Rav Chonin Bre de Rav Yeva. Rav Chonin removed him. He said to the malva, you can't go immediately and seize upon his properties. You didn't even try to collect cash from the love directly. Omar Rova, man chochim lemevat ki ha milsa, ilav Rav Chonin bere de Rav Yeva. Rova admires Rav Chonin, saying, who is so wise to do thusly, to remove the malva from the lova's properties, if it were someone other than Rav Chonin? Kosovar, the explanation for this is as follows. Nichse de bar inish, a person's properties, inun me'arvin yosei, a person's properties are like his guarantor. In other words, a person who borrowed money is expected to pay up cash. In the event that a person doesn't pay cash, so his property kicks in for him, sort of takes over his debts, and the property itself is used to pay up the debts. So the property is a type of guarantor of the loan. Once again, if the lender doesn't have cash to pay, then the properties are sought after. Similar to the idea that if the lender doesn't have money to pay up, if the borrower doesn't have money to pay up, then we seek out the guarantor. Hence you see the parallel between the role of a person's properties and that of a guarantor. Utnan, and the rule that applies to a guarantor is as follows. Hamalvis chaveru al yidei orev, lo yifra min ha'orev. The kaimolon lo yitba orev tchila. The Mishnah says that a lender who extends money to his friend with a guarantor in the picture, the lender does not collect from the guarantor, as the Mishnah says, and that meant that, what does that mean, that he doesn't collect from the guarantor? It means that he doesn't turn initially to the guarantor. Only in the event that the borrower has no property and has no means of paying, ran away, only then does the lender turn to the guarantor. Before we continue with the next incident, let us glance at our topic heading in the outside margin, the nosei. Orev al choiv shel avi yisoimim. There's a guarantor for a loan that was money that was owed by a man who died, leaving small children. Shepora Lamalva Chov Avihem, and this guarantor paid off their father's debt. Beli Litboa Mehaktanim Lishalem, without attempting to collect from the small ones, from the children, from the heirs. Shnei Hezberim Loma Lo Tova Mehem Lishalem. There are two Hezberim why they were not sought after for payment. One is Rapop is this explanation. Yisomim Lav B'nei Me'avad Mitzvah. The Yisomim are not obligated to fulfill mitzvahs. They're ketanim, they're underage, they're non-adult, they're children. And as a result, they don't have to pay their father's debts. And number two, Rav Huna Breid Rav Yoshua, he says that the reason we don't seek payment from the children of the borrower is that we suspect chashash shema tzori afasei she'aviem shilem l'malva merosh. We suspect that maybe their father already paid off the debt to the lender. Hence, the children don't have to pay anything if their father already paid up his debt. So we turn to the Gemara. Hahu arvo diyasmi. There was an orev of a loan, and the lender in this case died, leaving yisomim. Depare lemalve mekami delodinhu liyasmi. This orev paid off their father's debt before turning to the yisomim. The Rashbam, under the Gemara, Hahu Arvo Diyasmi, Avihem Lovo Bechayov, their father borrowed while he was alive, Ezeh Nas Orev Lamalve Bishvilo, and the Orev in our story was a guarantor of this man's loan, the father's loan. Lachar Moisoi Paro Orev Tchilo, and after the borrower died, the Orev paid off the debt. Mekami Dinit Beinhu Liyasmi, before attempting to collect from the Yisomim. Klomar, Mishalo Pora, what we're trying to say is that the Orev paid out of his own pocket the debt of the deceased. Velo Mishel Yisomim, and he didn't attempt to have them pay the debt. Shelo Yispik L'Tovam, he didn't have a chance to Toveah from them. V'ato Anel Chozer Aleim V'Tovam. And now the Orev is interested, after having paid off their father's debt, he would like to be compensated. So the question is, does this Orev get compensation from the children? Amar of Papa. Prias Balchov Mitzvah. The Rashbam explains that at the point that the Orev paid off their father's debt, he became a type of Balchov, whereby they, the Yisomim, are now chayev to him, to the Orev. The level of debt we will classify as a milva al peh, because once the Orev pays off their father's debt, there's no further documentation or contract, shtar, which indicates the Yisomim owe the Orev money. So at best, you're dealing with something that we categorize as a milva al peh. And there's a rule that prias balchov mitzvah, paying off debts, paying off oral obligations, is categorized as a mitzvah. Mitzvah, we will see later, is an expression that we're going to contrast with the word chiyuv. There's a mitzvah, and there's a higher level of obligation called a chiyuv. When we're dealing with this level of obligation, this milva al peh, this oral debt obligation, the payment of that is called a mitzvah. Prias balchov mitzvah. V'yasmi lav b'nei me'evad mitzvah ninu. The Yisomim being ketanim, they're not mitzvah, they don't have obligations to fulfill this. Hence, as long as they are ketanim, the Orev will not be able to collect from them. He will not be able to collect the debt or the money that he already paid off to the lender that to whom their father owed money. V'Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua, he says the same thing, namely that the Orev will not be able to collect his payment from the Yisayimim. But we introduce Rav Huna Rebbe Yeshua by saying that in fact Yisayimim are B'nai Me'evad Mitzvah. They could be categorized as those who are supposed to fulfill the mitzvah. The question then is, why is the Orev unable to collect money from the Yisayimim until they get older? The answer to that is going to be because maybe their father already paid off the Malveh. And that's what the Gemara says here. Rabbi Yeshua Omar, Amar, we say, Tzrori Afsei. Tzrori would be cash tied up in a pouch. Afsei was already given over, entrusted to the Malveh, to the lender. But as we look at Rav Papa and Rav Huna Rav Yeshua, according to both of them, the Orev does not get money from these youth, from these Ketanim. My Binayu. So what difference is there between the two explanations? Ika Binayu, Aleph, one difference may be, Kishechayev Moide. In the event that their father admitted b'shas misoso before he died that I owe the money. If at the point he was dying the father said I still owe the money, there is no chashash of tsrori. There's no chashash that it was paid up already. Hence, in the event that the orev does pay up that debt, the orev will be able to collect money from the yisomim. However, according to Rav Papa, that said that Yisayimim are lav b'nei me'evad mitzvah, even though we know the father didn't pay off the debt, once the Orev pays off the debt, at best there's a mitzvah to pay up the Orev. And since they're ketanim, they're not obligated to do that. Inami, another point of difference, would be beis d'shamtuhu umeis b'shamte, where the borrower, the father, had not paid up his debt, and by the time he died, he had previously been put into excommunication for not paying up debts, and he died in that state, in the state of being excommunicated. So, as far as Rav Huna Rav Yeshua is concerned, I have to say that's not true. He didn't pay up anything; otherwise, he wouldn't have died in a state of excommunication. So, according to Rav Huna Rav Yeshua, if the case was involving a person dying in excommunication and the Orev in the meantime paid up that man's debts to the lender, the Orev would be able to collect from the Yisayimim Ketanim. However, according to Rav Papa, even though we know the debt wasn't paid up, and once the Orev pays up the debt and creates an obligation between him and the Yisayimim, and their obligation to him would be the equivalent of a milva al peh, the payment of which is categorized as a mitzvah, but since they're Yisayimim, they're not b'nei me'evad mitzvah, they're not expected to fulfill that mitzvah because they're still ketanim, and therefore according to Rav Papa, the Orev would not be able to collect from them. Sholchu mitam, it was sent from Eretz Yisrael the following ruling: Shamtuhu umeis b'shamte hilchasok Rav Huna b'rei Rav Yeshua. In the event that someone owed money and was excommunicated for not having paid up his debt and died in that state, the Orev who pays up such a debt will be able to collect from the Yisayimim, and we will not say that they are not b'nei me'evad mitzvah. Gemara will now raise a question. The question will be directed on Rav Papa. We raise the question from a Tanaic source. Orev shoya shtar choiv yoitze mitachas yodoi. An Orev that is holding on to the shtar, the bill of collection. This indicates that the Orev, and he claims that he paid off their father's debt, and he's now turning to collect from the Yisayimim. So the source says, Eino goyve, the Orev cannot collect until they become adult. V'im kosuv bo, if the malve wrote, hiskabalti mimcha, I received payment from you, the orev, goive, then the orev will be able to collect from the yisoymen, from the children that are left upon the death of the lent of the borrower. Bishlamal or Rav Huna Rav Yeshua, according to Rav Huna Rav Yeshua, whose concern was the chashash of Tzrori Atvasei, that the father had paid up already before the orev came into the picture. Mishkachas lo kishechayev moide. Mishkachas lo means we can find a case of the orev collecting from the yisoymim in the event kishechayev moide. Where he admits that it was paid up already, and hence the orev has reason for collecting, has grounds for collecting. Elo the Rav Papa, according to Rav Papa, though, that spoke about the yisoymen being lav v'nei mevad mitzvah, kashya, how are we to understand this case that says that the orev can be gove from the yisoymen? The Gemara answers, shiny hossam. That case is different, where even Rav Papa will agree that the orev can collect. Delahochi torach bekosavle hiskabati. By virtue of the fact that that the lender troubled himself to write out that I received money, that thereby converts the obligation into a milva bishtar, and as such, the obligation to pay off a written debt becomes one of a chov, one of an obligation, and not merely a mitzvah. We glance at the Rashbam, Delahochi kosav le hiskabalti, Dehave orev muchsuk bishtar shiyesh lo alehem. We have a situation where the orev is holding the document. This document indicates that he, the orev, paid up the debt, and as a result of his paying up the debt, the lender gave his document of collection to the orev, with which the orev now can collect. V'lo chashiva milve alpe, and it's no longer considered a simple oral obligation. Uva milve b'shtar mudir of popo de gavinon miyasmi. When you're dealing with a written obligation, Rav Papa concedes that we will be able to collect from the yisoymim as well. The lo amrinan hocha mitzvah ela choiv. We don't categorize this anymore as a mere mitzvah, but rather as an obligation. Umutelas aleim lefroa baal korcham, and even against their will, they're obligated to pay this. We continue with another incident. Hahu arva the oved kechavim. We have a person serving as a guarantor of a loan, guaranteeing payment to a lender who is an idol worshipper. Depare le oved kechavim mekami dlebeinu liyasmi. This orev, this Jewish orev, paid the idol worshipper lender before he sought payment from the yisoymim. Amalei Rav Mordechi the Ravashi. Before we go on in the Gemara, though, let us glance at our topic heading under the heading on the outside margin, the Nosei. Orev, a guarantor, lemalva, to a lender, shuhu akum. the lender being an idol worshipper. Umeis haloive, and the borrower died. V'ha'orev shilein esachoiv, and the guarantor paid up the debt. Ha'im ha'orev yochol ligvois miyasemim haktanim. Can we say that maybe in this case the guarantor will be able to collect from the young children, the orphans that were left? Dien chashash litzrori. In such a case, we're not going to raise the possibility that their father, the borrower, paid off the lender ahead of time. Oy tzorach lahamtin ad shigdilu, or maybe we do wait until they become older, dechayshina litzrori, because we will consider the possibility of the debt having been paid off. So, let's continue in our Gemara, having been exposed already to the circumstances. Amalei Rav Mordechai Rav Ashi, Hochi Amar Avimi, Mehagronya, Mishmei de Rava. Thusly says Avimi, in the name of Rava, Afimu lemadomar chayshina litzrori. Even according to Rav Huna Rav Yeshua, who previously explained the reason that an Orev cannot collect, even though he paid off their father's debt, he cannot collect from the orphans, and that reason being because maybe their father already paid off the debt, and hence he had no reason to pay it up. That's called chayshino litzrori. Hani mili Yisrael. That's true in the case when the lender was Jewish. Aval ovi kechovim, if the lender is an idol worshipper, kevan deboser arva oziel, since it's known that idol worshippers pursue the guarantors, hence lo chayshino litzrori. There's no room to suspect that maybe the borrower paid ahead of time, that he already paid up the debt, because he knew that once there's a guarantor on the picture, the idol worshipper pursues the guarantor. Amale, Rav Ashi responds, he says, Adarabo. He says quite the opposite. Afilu lemadomar lo chayshino litzrori. Even according to the opinion that held, we don't take into consideration that maybe the father, the borrower, paid up ahead of time. Hani mili Yisrael. That's when you're dealing with a Jewish lender. Aval oivde kechavim. When you're dealing with idol worshippers that are lending, kevon de dinaihu boser arvo hazli, since it's known that their practice is to pursue the guarantor, ilav de atvise tsrori, if not for the fact that the borrower paid up, ilav de atvise tsrori, Meikora, lo have mekabale. The Orev never would have taken upon himself the role of guarantor. So, the fact that the guarantor took upon himself that role, that indicates to us that the loan was paid up ahead of time. Let us take a look at the Rashbam, Dibur HaMaschil, Avol, Hecha. So Rashbam says, Avol Hecha, Dehave HaMalva V'Kechovim. In the event that the lender was an idol worshipper, Ein HaLoive Matfiso Lo'oived Kechovim, sorry. The borrower would not entrust payment to him ahead of time. To Yoda Yisrael, the Vikhovim Hodarsu, the Goive Zimno Achriti Min Ha'orev. Because he knows that this Goy, this Oive Kechovim, is going to collect a second time from the Orev. So that is an explanation of the Tzad that says that since you're dealing with an Ovi Kechovim, there is no chashash that the money was entrusted or was paid up ahead of time. Continuing in the Gemara, V'chein hoya Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer ha'orev li'isha b'ksubasa. Moshe Bar Atzri, that's a gentleman's name, Arva b'ksubasa de kalsi have. He was the guarantor of his daughter-in-law's ksuba. Namely, there's a case of a father telling his son, encouraging him to get married, and as far as your ksuba obligations are concerned, I will guarantee them. Rav Huna Brei, Tzurba midrabbonan have, udachika leimilsa. The groom, Moshe Bar Atzri's son, whose name was Rav Huna, was a Talmudic scholar and suffering financial difficulties. Omar Abaye. Abaye comes up with this idea. How can we extricate Rav Huna from his financial difficulties? Leko denezel denaspe etza l'Rav Huna. Is there no one that would give a piece of advice to Rav Huna to do the following? Denigrisha litvisu. Let him divorce his wife. V'tezel v'tikvi ksuba me'avua. V'hadar nehadra. Then, once she's divorced, the woman will go to her father-in-law, who is offering a guarantee to payment of the ksuba, collect the ksuba money from her husband's father, and then Rav Huna will take her back, will remarry her, and have money in their home. Omar le Rava. Rava says, what kind of advice is Abaye trying to give? If you have a case of a woman collecting her ksuba money from an orev, the Mishnah teaches, the Mishnah says that under such circumstances, the husband who's divorcing his wife, who's going to collect from a guarantor, must forswear ever benefiting from her again. So in such a case, he wouldn't be able to remarry her. Amale Abaye, Otu called him Megarish Bebedina Megarish. Do you think that everyone who divorces, they divorce in a court where all of these points of halacha are executed? People don't necessarily go to a Beis Din. They will simply give a get in front of two witnesses and be done with it. And being that that's the case, no one there is going to order her to be Madir Hano from her husband. So the advice that Abaye offered could still be of a helpful nature. L'sof igloi milso de koyin hu. In the end, it turned out that the husband was a koyin, and therefore Abaye's etza would not have been helpful. Namely, when you're dealing with a koyin is forbidden to marry a divorced woman. So once he, the koyin, divorces his wife, in this case Rav Huna, divorces his wife, he would not have been able to take her back. And hence Abaye's etza for this couple coming into the money would not have worked. Amar Abaye, Hainu de Amri Inchi. Based on incidents like this, the common saying evolved, Boser Anyo Azla Aniusa, that poverty follows the impoverished, which means here you have a case of someone who is impoverished and no counsel is available to get him out of it. Gemara now continues analyzing what took place, and we've provided a marking here, a volcano marking, which is going to be flipping back and forth as the Gemara goes on. In the outside margin, we have a Mivne notation, a structural note, and we've called this a Ma'akav. Ma'akav is the attempt to keep track of the flow. When the narrow part of this form is facing upwards, kushos al hisnahalusoi shel Abaye, we're going to be raising some questions regarding Abaye's conduct in our Gemara, specifically the type of counsel that he offered. Eich hu hitzia atzosoi. How could it be that Abaye would offer such advice, Rav Huna yagarish ishto, that Rav Huna should divorce his wife, etc., and then take her back? Hare atzosoi is we've indicated over here, Hare Eitzah Kazeh Nechshav Rosha Orum. Offering counsel like this is considered the counsel of the wicked. The wicked or the cunning. Furthermore, we're going to ask, Haim Eitza Zu Bichlau Mo'il. Is an Eitza like this at all beneficial? Then we'll notice the form flipping over. Those will be Tshuva's responses. So turning to the Gemara. Umi Omar Abaye Hochi. Would Abaye have given such counsel in the first place? Namely, to divorce his wife and then take her back, and in the meantime, getting money from the guarantor. V'ho Omar Abaye, Ezeu Rosh Arum. Abaye himself has said, who is the cunning and wicked? Zehamasi Eitza Limkor B'Nechosim Kriv Shema Megamlio. That is someone who gives counsel to sell property based on Rav Shimon ben Gamliel's teaching. We have to offer a little bit of background, and the background that we'll be speaking out over here is actually information found in this Masechet. If a person says, I want all of my property to go to Mr. One, as Shchiv Meira says, the person who is deathly ill is assigning his property to Mr. One, and he says, after Mr. One, I want it to go to Mr. Two. According to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, if Mr. One sells the property, the sale is a good sale, and Mr. Two has no claim on it. If Mr. One sells the property, he may be, in fact, violating the wishes of the one that gave it to him, but according to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, the sale is a good sale. What happens if someone comes along and says to Mr. One, hey, why don't you go sell the property and make some money from it in the meantime? Such advice, or an advice giver like that, would be considered a Rosh Arum, because he knows full well that the giver of the gift initially wanted the property to go from Mr. 1 to Mr. 2. And by carrying out such a sale, Mr. 2 will never see any of this property. What do we get from this? We see that giving counsel to come into money through means that are not in the spirit of things is not acceptable, not desirable. Hence, it seems very uncharacteristic of Abaye to be suggesting to Rav Huna to try to extract funds from the Orev only to subsequently remarry his wife and be into the money. The Gemara answers, as far as how could Abaye give such advice, Benoi Shaini, Vitzurba Merabonon Shaini. The circumstances here are different. Here you have the guarantor who's going to be paying up the woman's ksuba. The guarantor happens to be the husband's father. What would a father not do for his son? And a second additional feature is that this was not an ordinary individual, the husband here, the groom. This was a Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar, so the money was going to go to an especially good cause. Number one, it's his son. A son who happens to be also a Torah scholar. The Gemara asks, but who says that this counsel would have worked on a legal basis, even to begin with? V'ha orev hu. V'kaim alon orev d'ksuba lo mishtabe. Maximum, the father here is a mere guarantor of the ksuba. And according to the way we paskin, one who is a guarantor of a ksuba is not duty bound to pay it up. So the Gemara answers, we weren't dealing here with a mere orev, but rather kablon have. And we've seen in previous sugyas, kablon is a higher level of obligation. So being that the father was a kablon, he would have to pay up the money. The Gemara asks, "Honicho leman d'omar kablon d'ksuba afagav d'les le'nichsi leval mishtabe shapir." If you say that a kablon of a ksuba is duty bound under all circumstances, even under circumstances that the husband, who's going to be the beneficiary of his debt being paid off by this kablon, that the kablon is duty bound even under circumstances that the husband doesn't have property, then fine, then I understand how this eitza could have worked. Namely, the son divorcing his wife, and the father, the kablon for the ksuba, would pay it off. And as we understood the story till now, this was a father paying off the ksuba debt of his son who didn't have any property. However, there's another opinion on this that says, e islay mishtabi, e leslay lo mishtabi, only under the circumstances that the husband who has the ksuba obligation to pay, that particular husband has property, only then will the kablon guarantor be bound. But if the husband doesn't have property, then the kablon, the guarantor, is not bound. Ma'ikol ameimar, what is there to say? The father of Rav Huna would not have been meshubad to pay this ksuba. As we saw in the story, the Rav Huna didn't have any property. We said dechikole. We saw in the description of the Gemara that it was dechikole. He was hard pressed financially. The answer, as you can see, the geometric form, the volcano form, flipped around with a narrow portion facing downwards, indicating an answer. True, when we encountered Rav Huna in the Gemara, he didn't have property, but when he got married, at the point he got married, he did have property. Vishtaduf means that it simply went bad later on. But since at the time he got married, he had property, therefore the father did become duty-bound. Viboyesemo, another explanation is, Abo legabi brei shibudi mishabed nafshei. A father, when it comes to his son, when his son is the issue at hand, the father will bind himself anyway. At this point in the Gemara, we have a brackets that appears, and the length of the brackets is indicated by the vertical dash dotted line that appears to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. We have a note in the inside margin regarding these brackets. Sograyim elu einom l'shem dilug. These brackets are not designed for the purpose of skipping. Ela boim laharois. Rather, they demonstrate, they show, she'ikur masu matan shel Gemara istayim, that the main thrust of the give and take of the Gemara is completed. Uma shemofia v'hemshech, and that which appears in the ensuing Gemara basograim, in the enclosed section, hu reka lema shehuzkar li'el. It simply is background for some of the points that were mentioned up till now. So as we go on the Gemara, we're going to bear in mind that we're going to be learning background information for that which we've already been exposed to. We also have a little chart on the inside margin that is available for you to fill in. The chart indicates on the right-hand column, Orev, and underneath that, Kablon, two types of guarantors. And then we have two types of debts, a ksuba debt and a balchov, a standard debt. And we're going to be interested in our discussion to know, when are these different individuals duty-bound? We also have a structural note in the outside margin, the Nosei Mifneh, where we feature the topic heading and the structure together. We have a double underline with dots in it. Those will be highlighting the expressions either Orev or Kablon, and either Ksuba or Balchov, different types of guarantors regarding two different types of financial obligations. Ha'im mishtabdim, do they become bound? So let us now look in the Gemara. De itmar, Orev de Ksuba. someone who serves as an orev, a guarantor, a standard guarantor for exuba, which is the financial obligations that a husband has toward his wife as they enter a marriage, divrei hakol lo mishtabed. Such an individual, this guarantor, is not duty bound, which would mean that in the event that the husband divorces his wife, that woman will not be able to turn to the orev for payment. Kablon de baal choiv, divrei hakol mishtabed. Someone who serves as a kablon level guarantor on a standard loan, everyone agrees that he is duty bound to pay up the debt, that the lender has all the right in the world to turn to the kablon for payment. Kablon de ksuba, the orev de balchov, notice these are 3 and 4 in our list of situations. A kablon, which is a very strong type of obligation, but with regard to a ksuba, or the orev, which is a weaker form of obligation. However, we're dealing with a standard balchov, a standard debt. Pligi, there is an argument concerning that. Mor sovar e islay nichsi laloive mishtabed, e less lay lo mishtabed. One opinion is that 3 and 4 will become bound only if the debtor has property, and if he does not have property, whether it be the husband in the case of the ksuba or the borrower in the case of the balchov, if they do not have property, then lo mishtabed. Umar savar, the other opinion holds, bein is lay ubein les lay lo mishtabed. Whether or not he has property, even in a case that he does have property, these types of guarantors are not bound. The Hilchasa Bekulu, the Gemara rules that regarding all of these cases, Mishtabed, the guarantor is duty bound to pay up the debt, and the Rashbam adds, even if the debtor does not have property, Bar me orev de ksuba, the afagav de isle la ba lo mishtabed, with the one exception being the orev of a ksuba, as opposed to a kavlon of a ksuba, the orev of a ksuba. However, even if the husband has property, he, the orev, is not duty bound to pay up that ksuba. My taima, mitzvahu di avad v'lav midi chasera. The orev entered this picture only to encourage the marriage to take place, and that we're going to classify as a mitzvah. He had no intention to ever pay up the ksuba. His whole intention was to see to it that this couple gets together. And furthermore, no money has been lost, per se. The woman entered the marriage without extending any monies, and it was beneficial to her to get married, based on the rule the Rashbam says, Tov Lemetav Tandu. And in the final picture, this Orev simply had other intentions in mind other than truly obligating himself. And as such, he is not duty bound. With that, we complete our shiur for today.